Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you today at PSP Investments' annual public meeting. Bonjour à toutes et à tous. C'est un plaisir.
Welcome, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you all today.
Sending my gratitude to the Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation, whose traditional, unceded, and ancestral territories I am on today. As this meeting is being transmitted virtually across Canada, I encourage you to reflect on the Indigenous territories from where you are participating. Please join me in reflecting on the history that brought us to this land and on the importance of reconciliation. So this is my first annual public meeting as Chair of the Board of PSP Investments, and I'm honored to be presenting to you. I'm accompanied by Deborah Orida, PSP's President and CEO. And with us here today, we have Jean-François Bureau, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial and Risk Officer, Louis Verronneau, Senior Managing Director and Global Head of Real Estate Investments, Sandirène Curtin, Managing Director and Global Head of Infrastructure Investments, Alexandre Roy, Senior Managing Director, Total Fund Management, David Ouellette, Senior Vice President and Chief Technology, Data, and Operations Officer, and Justin Nightingale, Senior Managing Director and Head of Global Alpha. And last but not least, Yolande James, Managing Director and Head of Strategic Communications and Global Government Affairs. So the annual public meeting is our opportunity to share the results of PSP Investments' 2024 fiscal year highlights. That's the period that runs from April 1, 2023, to March 31, 2024. And it's an opportunity for you, our stakeholders, interested parties, and members of the public to ask questions. The question and answer session will take place at the end of our presentations, and you can ask your question in the room and submit your questions using the chat function as of now so that we can start our Q&A promptly after the presentation. Vous pouvez soumettre vos questions dès maintenant en utilisant la fonction de chat pour qu'on puisse commencer notre session.
That function so that we can start our Q&A session immediately after the presentation.
To speak to our fiscal 2024 performance, I'd like to review PSP's mandate and governance, which are the starting point for everything that we do. Our mandate is to manage the amounts transferred to us by the Government of Canada for the funding of retirement benefits earned from April 1, 2000, by members of the public sector pension plans for the Federal Public Service, the Canadian Forces, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and since March 1, 2007, the Reserve Force. So PSP manages amounts transferred to it in the best interest of contributors and beneficiaries and invests assets with a view to achieving a maximum rate of return without undue risk of loss, having regard to the funding policies and requirements of the pension plans and the ability of those plans to meet their financial obligations. During their working life, members of the four pension plans contribute jointly with their employers to their respective plans. The Government of Canada transfers to PSP an amount equal to the total contributions, less expenses and funds used to pay pension benefits for service after 2000. We manage and invest the money in accordance with our mandate, and our legislative governance framework was established by the Public Sector Pension Investment Board Act, where the Government of Canada is responsible for the funding policy, communicating its risk tolerance to PSP via the reference portfolio, appointing PSP board members, the Pension Advisory Committee members, and the members of the Nominating Committee. It also tables PSP's annual report in Parliament. PSP has an arm's length relationship with the Government of Canada. It is guided by a board of directors, of which I am now the chair. And by design, none of the members of the board are executive management employees of PSP. Having a non-executive board helps to ensure that members bring an independent perspective to matters under consideration. PSP's directors are all appointed based on their professional experience and expertise and their capacity to guide the corporation. The board plays an important role in PSP's success. It is responsible for providing strong oversight and guidance to ensure the organization successfully manages growth and serves its mission to meet its long-term mandate. The board is involved in determining the organization's strategic direction and is responsible for oversight and risk management. It's also responsible for the selection, performance, evaluation, and compensation of the President and CEO, who reports to the Board. In carrying out its duties, the Board meets at least six times a year to review PSP's activities and strategy, and Board committees meet at least quarterly. One of the highlights of the Board's work in fiscal 2024 was finalizing and approving our new three-year corporate strategic plan for PSP that you can find in our latest annual report. The strategy sets out how PSP plans to evolve to respond to the challenges it faces in an increasingly competitive and volatile investment environment. And we have been working with Deb and her leadership team on the strategy for some time, and we're very pleased to approve the final iteration of the plan. Strategy includes measures of success that the Board will be tracking. Before I give the floor to Deb, I'd like to thank her very sincerely and her team for a job well done. I really look forward to working closely with them in the coming years. Merci beaucoup. À toi, Deb.
Merci, Maris. Thank you both for your presentation and so capably stepping into the role of chair of the board of PSP following the end of Martin Glynn's term. Bonjour à toutes et à tous. Nous sommes.
Hello, everyone. We are happy to be here. Thank you for being with us today.
Privilege to invest and manage assets to support the retirement of people who protect and serve Canada. I'm proud to present our fiscal 2024 results to you. PSP delivered another solid year of returns. As a long-term investor, the best measure of our success is our longer-term performance, our 5- and 10-year returns, and I'm pleased to report that we are meeting our objectives. This fiscal year, PSP's AUM grew to $265 billion, up from $244 billion, an increase of 8.7% over fiscal 2023. The 10-year annualized return of 8.3% outperformed both the reference portfolio by 110 bips and the return of the total fund benchmark of 6.7% by even more. This generated excess gains of $24.5 billion and $31.5 billion, respectively. Our five-year net annual return of 7.9% also outperformed the reference portfolio and the total fund benchmark and generated excess gains of $13.9 billion and $27.2 billion, respectively. While our one-year return of 7.2% underperformed the reference portfolio on a one-year basis, it's important to understand the difference in the composition of the reference portfolio compared to the PSP portfolio. The main difference in portfolio on a one-year basis is due to the exclusive allocation of the reference portfolio to public asset classes, whereas PSP's portfolio has a more diversified mix of asset classes with more than 50% of the portfolio in private investments. And while the one-year return is important, it is more a reflection of short-term market conditions and does not fully reflect the long-term benefits of diversification. Looking back over the last 25 years, PSP has grown in both size and sophistication. 25 years ago, our portfolio was $2.5 billion and is 100 times larger today at $265 billion. We've developed sophisticated direct investment capabilities in areas such as private equity, infrastructure, and private credit. And we now have the third largest assets under management of Canada's large pension investors, or the Maple Eight, as we're called. By design, our portfolio includes a wide variety of investments across public and private markets, geographies, and currencies. This diversification is key to managing the overall risk and ensuring the resilience of our portfolio. As you'll note in the geographic map, 19% of our portfolio is invested in Canada, representing approximately $56 billion. This includes significant investments in public equities, real estate, and infrastructure. We're proud to contribute to the Canadian economy through investments in companies that are creating quality jobs for Canadians, supporting communities, investing in the evolution of the Canadian, and investing in the evolution of the Canadian economy. Let me share just two examples. First, in 2008, we purchased the 370-acre Downsview Airport lands in Toronto from Bombardier. Since then, our subsidiary, Northcrest Developments, has been working to shape the future of the site. In February this year, we announced a partnership with the global real estate firm Hines to develop over 40 acres of the first neighborhood. Second example is in fiscal 2024, our wholly owned portfolio company, First Light Power, acquired a company called Hydromega, the first independent power producer to produce hydroelectric facilities in Quebec. Through this acquisition, we gained a set of quality operating assets and an experienced development team who are well positioned to meet the growing demand for renewable energy in Canada. Hydromega has 10 operating assets, hydro assets, in Ontario and Quebec, and a pipeline of more than 2 gigawatts of wind, solar, and battery projects. In the spring of 2023, PSP entered into an agreement with the Government of Canada to be the investment manager for the Canada Growth Fund. This is a separate $15 billion investment vehicle established to support the evolution of Canada's economy. The Canada Growth Fund is proving to be a successful investment vehicle that is helping Canadian businesses scale and commercialize their operations while helping our country meet its climate objectives. PSP is using our deep investment expertise across asset classes and our existing pool of strong talent to provide the investment management services to the Canada Growth Fund, leveraging our unique market position and our ability to deliver proven capabilities at scale. The Canada Growth Fund also offers PSP an important strategic advantage to us as investors. Because we have this mandate, we're able to learn and understand about one of the most important structural trends impacting our investment environment. And that's important for us as we invest for the future. So let's move on to the fiscal 2024 performance of our asset classes. Private equity, infrastructure, and credit investments remain among our best performers, with five-year respective returns of 14.8%, 12%, and 9.8%. Together with natural resources, they are world-leading franchises with incredible expertise. It may surprise you to hear that PSP is one of the largest farmland and timberland owners in the world. These asset classes provide not only the promise of higher returns over the long term, but also an important diversification and liability matching factors to our portfolio. For example, many of our assets in our infrastructure portfolio, which Sandarin runs, like utilities and data centers, provide stability in uncertain economic environments and benefit from inflation protection, either by contract or regulatory regime. Our credit investment group, which invests in private credit, started back in 2015. And is now a significant player in the market globally and enjoys an early mover advantage in a market that everybody is talking about now. But we've been doing this for a long time and have delivered inception to date returns of over 11%. This market has more than doubled over the last 5 years and taken market share from more traditional players. But we, with our early mover advantage, have capitalized on the opportunity and grown our private credit portfolio to more than $26 billion. We've invested more than $60 billion in that asset class since inception. And the five-year returns, as shown on the slide, are 9.8%, significantly exceeding the benchmark of 4.9%. Real estate remains an essential part of our balanced investment approach. As you know, the real estate market generally had a difficult year, and our group was no exception. Our one-year performance was negative 15.9%, and our portfolio, our real estate portfolio, was negatively impacted by the higher interest rate environment as well as structural changes. Over the last 5 years, though, the asset class has outperformed its benchmark. And we view real estate as an essential component of our balanced investment approach and a broader diversified portfolio. It's performing for us over the longer term, and that's what matters the most. Our capital markets is comprised of two asset classes, public market equities and fixed income. Starting with public market equities, the asset class is managed using a combination of traditional active and passive strategies, as well as alternative investments. The asset class continues to demonstrate its resilience over time, through sound portfolio construction and diversification, as evidenced by its five-year annualized absolute return of 10.3%, translating into 150 basis points of outperformance over the five-year benchmark. Fixed income at PSP is managed by an experienced team of professionals who invest global sovereign debt and emerging market debt. These investments are managed both internally and externally through partners with specialized investment expertise. The fixed income five-year return of 2% outperformed the five-year benchmark of 1.6% due to strategic management and our long-term investment horizon. As we look ahead, we are facing a new and increasingly complex investment regime. Let's take a quick look at some of the factors that are impacting the investment environment that we're operating in. First is the macroeconomic environment. We expect economic growth to continue to be impacted by the lagged effects of higher interest rates, as shown on this slide. Our base case scenario has GDP growth slowing in the US, although we expect a soft landing, which is good news for the world economy and financial markets. And while there are concerns that a slowdown could turn to a recession, we don't think this is the most likely scenario. And PSP's highly diversified portfolio is well positioned to be resilient in the face of market volatility and more difficult economic conditions. We expect modest growth recovery in Canada, which has not held up as well as the US economy in the face of higher rates. Productivity here in Canada is low, and unemployment growth has not kept up with the cumulative population growth. However, interest rate cuts should help stage a modest recovery in Canada. Inflation is decreasing to below 2%, which has eased worries about staying above target. However, there is still the potential for inflationary shocks to be mindful of. For example, the current geopolitical context could cause a spike in inflation through disruption in supply chains or higher commodity prices from an oil shock. But with inflation risks dissipating and growth slowing, central banks are pivoting towards rate cuts. Given a weaker economy in Canada, we expect a faster and potentially deeper cycle of monetary easing here. However, as long-term investors, we remain mindful of the longer-term structural trends that may exert ongoing inflationary pressures. Examples are deglobalization and industrial policies that could exert upward pressure on inflation and force central banks to keep interest rates higher than they were in the pre-COVID period. In addition to the fluctuating macroeconomic conditions, we're facing other structural forces. For example, rapid technology evolution, shifting geopolitics, and of course, the whole economy transition required by climate change. These external factors contribute to an increasingly polarization of the societies in which we work and live, and a higher uncertainty and potential volatility for investors. I want to assure you that PSP is well positioned to succeed in the new investment regime. The macroeconomic conditions and structural trends will create risks, but also unique opportunities for long-term investors like PSP. and we aim to seize those opportunities and fulfill our important mission. I encourage you to read our annual report and recently released sustainability report, which will give you a good picture of how we're navigating these complex issues. In closing, we accomplished a lot in this last fiscal year with results we're proud of. I also want to acknowledge that PSP's results, both financial and non-financial, are thanks in large part to our committed and talented employees and leaders. We're very proud of our mission, and we will continue to capitalize on the opportunities that will arise that will allow us to position the organization for long-term success in line with our mandate. On behalf of PSP, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. It is truly an honor to have presented to you and to serve our important mission. Merci à tous.
Thank you. Merci beaucoup. Thank you to Maryse and Deb. We'll now begin our question and answer period for the next few minutes. Just a few housekeeping rules. As Maryse mentioned earlier on, you can submit your questions through the chat function. And vous pouvez évidemment poser vos questions dans la langue.
You can ask questions in whatever official language you want to use. Il y a des micros disponibles pour ceux qui sont dans l'auditoire ici en présentiel. Alors, j'ai une question ici, dans le clavardoir, d'abord, pour vous, Deb. Qu'est-ce que la stratégie de PSP relativement aux opportunités d'investissement intérieur en ce qui a trait à l'action gouvernementale à ce sujet?
So, as I mentioned in the presentation, we're incredibly proud of the $56 billion that we have invested here in Canada, which represents 19% of our portfolio. At the same time, we have an important mandate to maximize returns without undue risk of loss, having regard to the funding of the pension plans that we support. And the independence of the Canadian pension plan model has been a core pillar of its success. And so we remain mindful of our legislative mandate to maximize returns without undue risk of loss, having regard to the funding, and continue to look for good investment opportunities that will support the funding of the plans, both in Canada and abroad.
Thank you. Any questions in the room? Seeing none, no further questions. Oh, yes, the microphone is right to your left.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My question really relates to the synergy that you spoke of between the Canada Growth Fund and PSP Investments. You talked about how there was feedback or interaction. Could you just elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure.
Absolutely. As you know, the fund that we manage on behalf of the pension plans is separate from the $15 billion that have been given to us or that we manage on behalf of the government for the Canada Growth Fund. But the focus of the Canada Growth Fund is to invest in the evolution of the Canadian economy. So both the technology and the financial instruments that are being developed in order to support the transition of the economy. And being involved in that is giving us as an organization knowledge about one of the most important structural trends that's going to impact our investing environment over the long term. So we do think that it's a benefit to PSP as we invest for the future and for the long term to have this opportunity to learn from investing the Canada Growth Fund.
But in terms of the executives involved in the growth fund versus the executives involved in the PSP, the regular fund, I mean, is there an overlap in terms of executive decision making? That's the question.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. So we, in order to deliver on the investment management agreement that we signed with the government to manage the Canada Growth Fund, we set up a separate subsidiary, the Canada Growth Fund Investment Management, that has its own management team and investing team so that they could be dedicated to
the mandate of the Canada Growth Fund and not distract the investors that are focused on investing to support the funding of the pension plans.
Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for your presentation and congratulations on the results you've obtained from the fund. I'm from a group of institutions in Canada and around the world that are exceedingly concerned about climate change, the crisis that is only deepening almost day by day. In addition to the two hurricanes that barreled across Florida, there were events like devastating rainfalls in eastern Morocco in the Sahara Desert, which is not used to this kind of weather at all. We feel that investors have a particular role in navigating the way forward, and among the investors, pension funds such as PSP and the other Maple 10 that you mentioned have an exceedingly important both task and challenge. We're somewhat uncomfortable with the way PSP treats what it calls a systemic climate change risk in your sustainable investment policy, not like a global emergency that could make it impossible for PSP to fulfill its mandate, but just as another structural risk factor. I'd like to hear some more about the way PSP sees the risk and the challenges, including the possibility of stranded assets in the future, which pose a risk to the very solvency of the fund, as well as a risk to deepening the climate crisis. Thank you.
So yes, I can answer at least the beginning of what I've understood of your question. So if I take one step back, the investment belief of PSP is for sure including ESG factors. So for us, ESG is one of the factors that will most probably impact all the sectors and all the geographies, as you pointed out, for example, hurricanes and stuff like that. It is therefore part of our investment thesis. So when we do present an investment at the investment committee, we review all the climate aspect of these specific investments, and we make sure that we have a strong view on that. What we do tend to do is much more to focus on engagement rather than divestment, engagement rather than exclusion. So this is what we're doing, and we're using our expertise, we're using our network, we're using our influence and our capital in order to make sure that all these aspects are taken into consideration, not only in the investments that we're doing, but also having a positive impact for the society. So this is how we deal with ESG and climate as a specific matters.
Thank you.
I see you're still thinking about our answer. Maybe one thing I would add is that the important investment principle when thinking about sustainability is making sure that it is considered as one of the material factors when it's relevant to the investment, depending on the location, the nature of the investment, the intended hold period, etc. And so we think that it's a more sophisticated and appropriate approach to incorporate ESG and including climate change as an investment consideration. It, among other considerations, rather than taking a blanket approach.
Thank you. Thanks, Deb.
Hi, Ken Johnson. I'm a scientist who was with the federal government, retired. I wanted to congratulate you first on your returns. It makes me wonder if you're choosing the right baseline, if you're doing so much better than the baselines. That's the first question. The second thing, I'd like to follow up on the climate issue. Of course, we know there's a remarkably serious climate crisis happening. It seems at a time like this, it's no time to be investing in fossil fuels at all. In fact, I think you should be getting rid of your fossil fuel assets and pushing them towards renewables, because Canada is committed to huge reductions in of carbon footprint by 2030, and we're simply not going to make it because there isn't enough investment there. If you took the at least $8 billion you have in fossil fuels and moved them to renewables in Canada, it would really help and encourage the transition that we need to see for us, our children, and our grandchildren right off the top. So in terms of very specific questions about that, first of all, you have a 2026 target for reducing the carbon intensity of your portfolio. I didn't see anything up on your presentation about how far you are into it, whether you're going to meet that target, and that's the first question. Maybe you could answer that.
Yeah, maybe we can just ask the limit to one question so that we can.
Well, then I better continue my question because I have a number of things I'd like to ask for, and I see that there's a lot of people here who aren't asking questions today.
So maybe we could just
we start with that.
Thank you. For the first question on the benchmark.
I actually thought it might be good for Sandrine to have an opportunity to tell you about some of our renewable investing in Canada.
Absolutely.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. So I think the first thing I want to say is you have to bear in mind again that the mandate of PSP is to invest in good risk-adjusted returns without with taking into account the funding risk as well. I think that's the first point. The second point is we do recognize that there are numerous opportunities in renewables globally. So as an example, we started investing in renewables in 2011 in Canada. We bought a portfolio of 135 megawatts of hydro assets in Ontario. Today, we have, through our portfolio companies, we operate actually 10 gigawatts of renewables globally. More recently, we acquired a business called Hydromega, which is a renewables developer, which was incorporated in Montreal, and they have 10 hydro assets in Ontario and in Quebec, and more importantly, they have a pipeline of 2 gigawatts that they're developing across Canada. So we are looking actively at many more opportunities in Canada to develop renewables.
Thank you. What I would suggest, though, is that you invest in renewables and then you invest in fossil fuels, you undermine your renewable investments by investing in fossil fuels. How many billion do you have in renewables?
We've got approximately, in infrastructure, around $6 billion invested in renewables.
But we've got $8 billion at least, maybe as much as $12 billion in fossil fuels. So we're not going the right direction here still.
I understand. Thank you for your question. It's just that we have also some other questions coming in the chat, so we want to be just respectful of everyone doing that. So we're going to move on to
that. Could I ask one more?
Next question. I'm just going to, for those who are online, out of respect for them, okay? So there are another question coming in either for Alexandre or Deb. There are a number of companies you're investing in that are complicit in genocide. How will you divest from these companies to ensure the fund beneficiaries are not complicit in these acts?
Yes, thanks for the question. So just to be clear, PSP is always investing in accordance with all the laws and rules that are applicable. So that's something that we follow very strictly. So we do not invest in companies that offers product or services that are prohibited by applicable treaties or regulation, such as landmines and cluster mine and munitions. As per the active management that we pursue, so we are, again, much more inclined in having a strong process rather than having a blanket exclusion. But the process for sure takes into consideration all the human rights aspect in order to fulfill the core mandate of PSP.
Thank you. Any further question?
Yeah, I appreciated the answer I did get, but I didn't really get an answer to the question I had, which was how is the decarbonizing the fund? There was a target for 2026, and I'd like to hear specific details of how far along you are on that and whether you're going to meet your 2026 target. And more importantly, have you set a target for after 2026, 2028 or 2030 target for further reduction? And I'd like to hear specifics, not the generic. The generic stuff doesn't help.
Yeah,
thank
some
you for
specifics.
Alex, I'm
looking at my notes just to make sure that I have the right numbers. So, for example, the green assets that we were targeting, we have now 21.5% of our AUM compared to 16.2%. So this is the first aspect. The other one is the transition asset. So this is something that is core of our investment belief in the sense that we want to invest in transition asset because we need transition assets to grow in the green space. So it went from 2.6% to 3.8%. Last but not least, the increase of the coverage. This is something that, and I fully understand that you are particularly aware of the evolving in this space, so it's not something that is cast in stone. So the coverage of the data that we can have has increased year over year by 8%. So this is something that we still work on it. It's something that is for sure in the making. It's not something that is over yet. It's something that is evolving, but I can assure you that we follow the pace.
Thank you.
These are the specific numbers.
Maybe I'd just add, philosophically, I think investment organizations have often taken one of two tracks on this issue, mm-hmm. which is a divestment approach or an approach of investing in the transition, using our capital and influence to try to invest in transition of carbon-intensive industries. And we decided to take the latter approach rather than a simple divestment approach, which may take the asset out of our portfolio, but doesn't actually help transition the economy.
Well, thank you for that. I think if you don't dive, can you give me an example of a high carbon investment you have that has reduced its emissions significantly?
We're working particularly in areas like in our real assets, like in infrastructure, where we often have influence or control over our investments, or in our natural resources investments, where we also have the right amount of influence and control to be able to impact the operations. We've made a lot of progress in a number of portfolio companies. Now, Sam, do you want to speak of any specific?
Yes, I think if you want a specific example, one of them is a business that we've actually decided to sell recently, which is AirTrunk. But during our ownership, AirTrunk is a data center platform in Asia and Australia. And as you can imagine, data centers consume a lot of electricity. And a big focus for us was to ensure that we have a sustainability plan in order to reduce the emissions. And we've been able to source power from renewable energy producers to reduce the carbon footprint across our data centers.
And I think that was a great example of not only investing in the transition of a company, but also creating value, because increasingly the customers of these large data centers mm-hmm. want data centers powered by green energy.
Well, I'm encouraged by that, but I still come back to my initial question, which is, you have 2026 targets. How far along the way are you to meeting that target, and have you set a target for after 2026 for carbon reduction? And if you haven't, when will it be publicly available target?
We are continuing to update our climate strategy, and that's one of the objectives for this fiscal year.
As a scientist, I'm always unencouraged without data. Can you give me data on how well you've done in reducing the carbon footprint of the fund since 2020, when you have a commitment to reducing it by 20 to 25% by 2026?
I believe Alexandre Roy did answer that question and did provide you with some specific data with regards to that question. I just want to, again, truly being respectful of
courage of asking questions, but we also do have some coming from the chat. Want to give others opportunities to ask questions as well.
I just maybe add that the data, we do disclose our data in accordance with the TCFD recommendations in our sustainability report and our TCFD report, which are available online.
Okay, thank you.
Perfect. Any questions further from in the chat?
Sorry, I don't be not to be annoying, but there doesn't seem to be anyone else asking a question.
Which is, you can ask it. We have a few minutes left. Yep.
A different concern is that if you have at least two members on your board, investment board, that have connections with the oil and gas industry, and I'm wondering, can those two board members really give independent advice on clean energy and what to invest in if their modus operandi is to support the oil and gas industry, which has been incredibly, in Canada, has been incredibly irresponsible in terms of reducing emissions. We all know the emissions are actually going up from the oil and gas industry. They're doing basically almost nothing as an industry, but begging for endless free money, even though they've been the most financially successful businesses in the last few years. So I really curious how you managed to, whether you have climate people on that committee as well. Do you have a couple of climate activists on that committee, on that board?
So our board members are appointed by the governor and council on the recommendation of the president of the Treasury Board, and that comes from a list that's provided by the nomination committee that's outside of PSP that gets provided to the Treasury Board. But all of our directors have a fiduciary obligation to PSP. And when they are sitting as directors of PSP, their duty is to make decisions in the best interest of the organization on which they sit on PSP, on PSP's board. And we do have also very strict policies that manage any conflict of interest that could arise to the extent there might be a transaction that involves an entity in which they're otherwise involved. So I think those are the guardrails, if you will, that we have to make sure that everybody that's on the board of PSP actually works for PSP.
I'm sure direct conflicts of interest would not be a problem. I understand that. However, just general outlook, strategy, approach, the oil and gas industry thinks it needs to be around for a very long time. And I'm sorry to be annoying here, but we're dealing with the climate catastrophe, which is unfolding every single day. And we're just not moving forward on it. Canada's carbon footprint has not gone down at all. It's still 12% higher. We're the rogue nation of the G7. Every other country in the G7 has reduced their carbon footprint below what it was in 2005. We're 12 or 15% above that. And so I might be nagging, but I'm nagging for my grandchild. And I just am not getting I'm not getting specific enough answers. I still come back to you have a commitment for 2026. Where are you on that road? I saw all these other statistics. You must have those statistics. And if they're in your report, you could look them up for me right now.
So again.
And do you have a commitment after 2026 about reduction? And this is the problem of having board members who are involved in the fossil fuel industry. They may be still doing their fiduciary responsibility to you, but their perspective is all about oil and gas, not renewables.
With respect, I would disagree with that. I think the board members bring their entire selves to decisions at the board, and that perspective is just as informative as any other board member's perspective. And you have two members out of 11. They bring a perspective that is important and valuable for us as investors to hear. So I would respect.
Do you have any board members that come from the activist community or climate scientists?
We have board members that come with a very wide variety of expertise and frankly all the investment and asset classes in which we're invested.
Thank you. I'm just going to switch gears here. We have a question coming in for Louis. Can you elaborate on PSP's real estate performance in FY24 and on its vision and new leadership as well?
Well, I'm not going to comment on new leadership. That would be commenting on myself, I guess. But the in terms of commenting on the performance, for sure. So I think when you're looking at the performance, you have to look at, there's three key numbers, right? There is the this year's performance, which is, I'm going to round up because it's just easier, but it's minus 16%, which obviously is disappointing. There is the five-year performance, which is, again, rounding is 1% and plus 1%. And there is the 10-year performance, which is 6%. I think when you're investing in an asset class, you have to keep in mind two key things. One is we PSP are a portfolio. So sometimes some of the trends going on in the market that disadvantage, for example, real estate, may at the same time be advantaging other parts of the portfolio. That's why we're not designed to fire up on all cylinders, pardon the combustion engine reference. We are meant to have compensating, to be counter-cyclical in some assets. So this year, real estate is contributing minus 16%. Last year was contributing plus 12%. So you have to take the long view on this. We view the performance on a 10-year horizon much more than on a yearly horizon. This being said, I think what we do is every year we look at our results on the yearly basis, and we figure out what are the lessons we can learn, where did we do well, where did we get it wrong. And sometimes you get it wrong simply because, you know, the market trend is not favorable. Sometimes you get it wrong because you say, you know, we've missed this, or we didn't double down on that. So it's learning those lessons while at the same time keeping in mind we are a long-term investor. We don't need to sell a building at a particular inopportune time in the cycle. So currently, obviously, for real assets, the main driver of performance in real estate is interest rate movements. So that, to some extent, we are a bit like bonds on that. So in a year where interest rates went up rapidly, we were expecting a negative performance in real estate. So I think that would be my answer, Yolande.
Yes, that's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we could take maybe one last question in the room and one in the chat before we wrap things up. Thank you.
Thank you. It's really just a follow-on to the real estate question, because I think you answered pretty well the strategic aspect of it. But my question is really how the real estate assets are valued, because it's not a public market, so you have to do some valuations. Can you talk about a little bit about the methodology for that, please?
Yes. With great pleasure, and Jean-François may jump in as well with a few comments of his own. So I think there's a couple of things that are very important in how you evaluate real estate assets, or frankly, any private asset. The first one is we want to make sure that we're not marking our own homework. So we do want to make sure that we are getting external valuations, so external parties providing valuations. And within PSP, we have two groups that come to bear on the views on valuation. So we take the report from the outside party. It is looked at by the real estate group because we can bring in a market perspective. And it is looked at by our valuation, so I'm going to get the acronym wrong, valuation governance group, which sits in finance, so a different part of the organization, so just to make sure, again, that nobody's marking their own homework. So that's the first answer to your part of the answer to your question. The second part is, speaking like a reformed investment banker, everyone understands that valuation is an art, not a science. So at any given point in time, in the real estate industry, people are particularly dependent, I'm going to say culturally, on precedent transactions, as opposed to other methodologies that you would use in some other industries. That comes with a certain bias, which at the scale of the portfolio probably doesn't matter very much. At a scale of looking at the performance over multiple years, again, doesn't matter very much. But in a given, if you were to take a given building at a given point in time, that might cause the valuator to be slightly more optimistic or slightly more pessimistic, depending on which way the market is trending. So generally speaking, in what we have seen in the recent correction, I think I would say that, you know, I would have thought 2 years ago, I would have thought they were maybe a bit giddy, and I think they're a bit downbeat now. But that will self-correct over time. So in terms of at the portfolio level, I am confident that we are getting an accurate picture. And certainly one thing I take great comfort of is I am quite certain we are not marking our own homework. Jean-François, anything you want to add?
No, just one little thing. As you can appreciate, it does influence the overall results of PSP. So it's a point that is reviewed intensely by both the external auditors, which for PSP is Deloitte, and also the Office of the Auditors of the Office of Auditors General of Canada. So in both cases, I think, as Louis pointed out, we don't want to mark our own homework. There's definitely governance, proper governance internally, but having the external auditors review and then the audit committee of the board gives you an assurance that, you know, it is the true mark of the market.
Thank you. Last question. Well, why do you think the government chose PSP to manage the Canada Growth Fund? Maybe Deb could take that one.
So we're very honored to have the mandate to manage the Canada Growth Fund, and we think that the government chose PSP in recognition of our established investment expertise and track record, recognizing the benefits of going to an established organization so that we could ramp up quickly, as you've seen by the 8 investments and $2 billion that the Canada Growth Fund has committed already within 15 months of operation, and also from the governance that PSP has. As we've talked about, PSP operates at arm's length from the government. We have the oversight of a professional board of directors, and that helps us make decisions based on the best investment decisions as opposed to being swayed by political influences that might have other objectives.
Yeah. Thank you, Deb, and to everyone. Ceci met fin à la période des questions. That wraps up our question period. Please note that you can watch this séance or this annual public meeting on our website as of the 23rd of October. Vous pourrez revoir la séance d'aujourd'hui.
Be able to watch this on our PSP website starting on October 23rd, 2024. So, thank you so much for participating. Thank you for attending. Thank you for your questions. And see you next time. Merci beaucoup pour votre participation. Merci d'avoir été là. Bonne journée à tous.